Got a few thoughts that I want to share with you guys today. One of the most well-known or more well-known verses where Jesus would many times refer, or the apostles will many times refer to, as an Old Testament verse that was actually reflecting to Jesus, especially when he would spoke to the Jews. And this verse would sound something like this: "The stone which the builders rejected is the one that God has chosen to be the cornerstone." Now, that stone then, obviously, which would refer to the cornerstone, would refer to Jesus. Now, there is many stones in Christianity. For instance, love is a stone. Love is part of our Christian experience. Faithfulness would be part of our Christian experience. Joy would be part of our Christian experience. Morality would be part. Purity would be part. Will be all stones that would be part of our Christian experience. But what the writer said, like, even though there's many stones in the Christian walk and everybody embraced, there's this one stone that when the builders got to this stone, it's actually the one that they reject. And the problem that they made with that is the very one that they rejected is the one that I made as the cornerstone. Every stone, even though there's many stones, only one stone can be the cornerstone, the one from which we build off. For instance, obviously this cornerstone referred to Christ. But for instance, love is a stone. Love can be a stone that we embrace in Christianity. By the way, love is a stone that we embrace in Buddhism as well. Love is a stone that we embrace in secular worldview. We all embrace that stone. And so sometimes we can make as Christians the mistake in substituting something that is also part of our Christian walk, something like love, and substitute it with the cornerstone and make love the cornerstone and make love the foundation from which we build up. Now, guys, just follow me. Love is a great thing, but love can never be the foundation. And so sometimes what we then do is, with something like love or any other character, Christian characteristic, we put that at the foundation and we put that as the cornerstone which we build around. If we put love as the cornerstone, it is a very nice cornerstone to have, because then we suddenly are so inclusive and the world can be part of us, and we can have t-shirts that says "love wins," and everybody is just a lucky, happy world, you know. Everybody is just together and we just love one another and that type of things. But see, even though love is a great thing and it's part of our Christianity, in fact, it's regarded as a very important stone, it can never replace the cornerstone, which is Christ. And what I have found is that there is such a battle to substitute the cornerstone with something other than Christ, not just with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But the good things in Christianity is many times substituted with Christ. And I'm gonna mention a couple of examples today that I've just found like subtly taking the place. And some of you would go like, "No ways, but that is a stone. That is good." It's like what I'm saying. Am I saying love is bad? No, I'm not saying love is bad. It just can't be the cornerstone. It can't be the foundation. And we must make sure that we guard this right foundation. We guard this stone more than anything else. So, Martha, if you can go to 1 Corinthians 3, verse 10 to 14. So, Paul is a master builder. He must make sure when he walks with a group of people, when he walks with an individual, he must make sure that the foundation, the right thing, is in the right place. So, he says, "According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I lay a foundation. Someone else is building upon it. Let each one take care how he builds upon it. For no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." Right, there is no other foundation than Jesus. Okay, then verse 12. "Now if anyone builds on the foundation," so obviously the only thing that we're not only going to speak about Jesus. We're going to speak about love. We're going to speak about faithfulness. We're going to speak about discipline. We're going to speak about purity and all those type of things, but we must always make sure that when we regard it, it's always on the foundation and it doesn't replace the foundation, which I will explain now a bit more. Each one's Each one's work will become manifested, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. And so what Paul is saying, even though we will see many churches and we will see many Christians, and they will carry stuff like prayer, reading their Bibles, love, community, all those type of things would be part of that. But when the fire will come, it will test, where did those things come? Where was that foundation built on? And it will prove then how solid the work was, how much was the stone that was rejected by every other man in its place. Now, I'm going to give you 5 examples from wrong foundations. Okay? The first one is Christianity is not a discipline. So, how many of you have ever been fit? I was thinking it's the wrong crowd. All right. All right. I've been scanning over and... All right, so it's the right crowd. So, how many of you have ever been fit and then you get sick somewhere down the line, or you got lazy, or something happened that you've lost that fitness? So all of you have had that experience, right? You've lost your fitness. We can use that example of diet as well. We can get that now. So, so you've lost your fitness, and then depending on how quickly you wake up to your shocking lazy state of excuses, you wake up at some stage and you go like, oh, I need to get fit again. But then looking at this mountain that you need to climb again to reach that fitness is so discouraging that you go like, I cannot do it. And you see, you muster up all your strength and you go like, or you just never get to it. Okay? That experience there is many people's Christian experience. So many of you, let me tell you, many of you have had a time in your life where you were more disciplined in regards to your Christian devotion. You read your Bible, you pray, you did what you need to. You were fit in doing the Christian program every day, every week. And so you've slept a little bit in some areas. All right? You need to wake up, oh sleeper. You're waking up. And it's time to turn back. But right now for you to look back at where you were is a massive burden. If looking back to Jesus, okay, it's like, okay, I'm obviously not at a good state in my Christian walk. I need to turn. But the feeling that you get in turning back to the Lord is one of the same one of turning back to the gym. Oh. All right. So Jesus said, I just want to say, Jesus says, all who are burdened and heavy laden, come to me, for my yoke is light. But the reason that we don't come to Jesus, but we go to a disciplined spiritual life. Now don't get me confused here. I'm not saying discipline is not a stone. It should be something that is part of our Christian walk as we get along. But it can't be replaced by the foundation that we simply build on disciplined life. Now, I want to tell you, that is such a popular Christian approach, putting discipline at the foundation. So, I worked at a Bible school with hundreds, but many, many young people came through me. And all of them were concerned. They wanted to grow as Christians. That was their obsession. And so regularly I would ask them, that would be the regular answer, small groups, much smaller than this, I will go one by one, how's it going with your relationship with Jesus? And I'm telling you, the standard answer is this, it's going great, I'm just not spending enough time with God. So what they're actually saying to me is, you know, they're saying to me that the standard of the spiritual training program that they set out for them, which is, no one really knows what is the standard. The feeling is always kind of, you're just never good enough. You know, you always come short. That's the general feeling, all right? But somewhere in there, they have not reached their standard. And they will only feel good about themselves if they reach their standard. You see, that's not Jesus. That's not relationship. That's not a person. I've often sat with people, and they're not pumping in their relationship with the Lord. They're obviously feeling like they need to do something here. They need to do, and they come and sit with me. And then many times I would sit with somebody else. All right, that's the thing. If two guys counsel one person, there's always a little bit conflict counsel that's going on. You know, you kind of learn how to work in unity together and that type of thing. The worst is when it's me and my wife. All right. For us to keep the unity, because we've got different approaches and stuff. But I feel like I need to get out of this hole now. I'll not look there for a while. She's intimidating me. I'm sorry, buggy. But this is what you will find a guy. Okay, so he's struggling in his relationship with the Lord. How's it going? It's going terrible. I didn't find the Lord. All those type of things. Okay, you need to come back. All right, that's the general conclusion. You need to get back. Yeah, but how? Okay, and that's the answer that people give, generally. You want to get back to the Lord? Now let me tell you. How much Bible reading are you doing? Oh, I'm not reading my Bible. Praying? Oh, very little. Are you going to church? Okay. This is what you're going to do. This is what we're going to do. I want you to wake up every morning at 6. I want you to go for the Gospel of John. I want you to read one chapter every day. After that, I want you to pray in half an hour, and I want you to go to all the calm meetings. Get it? Guy's like, all right, got my training program set out for me. I'm going to do it. How often do I find that that's really not the solution to a person? Just turning people to a discipline is not the answer. So what would be my what would be my take on it? I would ask questions like something like this, like we asked today. Where's your hope, man? Where's your hope? What is your fears at the moment? And it's all of those questions, I will show to him where he is turned away from the Lord and find satisfaction, find hope, find trust, find things in other things than Jesus, and then to help him turn to Jesus. Now, now obviously it is good for me to read my Bible so that I can turn to Jesus, but just merely a discipline in place is not a substitute for the person of Jesus. All right? And again, I'm not dissing discipline as a good stone that needs to be in our building. It just cannot be in our foundation. And if we build people up, we need to build them, we need to lead them to a person, not merely to a discipline. All right? The second one. Are you ready, Josh Jen? The church is not the foundation of the church. The church is not the foundation of the church. The church can't replace the foundation. All right? The foundation needs to remain Jesus. Now, I'm going to read you guys. If I say Josh Jen, you say Acts 2:42. All right? Josh Jen. All right. Acts 2:42. All right. This is the result of, this is the church. It says, and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and the prayers. And all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. It was 44 and 45. And all who believed were together and had all things in common, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any at need. Verse 44 and verse 44 is the epitome of community life, of church life, that we want to hold on to. Your fridge is my fridge, and my fridge is your fridge. Another word for it would also be communism. This is communism, guys. If ever you want to have the Communist Manifesto right there played out, it is that one. That's communism. And if Karl Marx, the founder, one of the founding thinkers behind communism, would have been able to walk around the early church, he would have gone like, "Eureka, wow, how did you guys do this? This is amazing. This is what I've been dreaming of all along. How did you get the guys to actually believe this stuff? What did you trick them with? How do you manipulate them? How do you control them to do this?" No, we don't do that. We don't do that. You see, the difference between the early church, the expression of the early church, and the communist ideal is exactly the same. The difference lays in the means. The difference lays in the foundation. Because there was the revelation of Jesus that struck in people, people started living for a greater good. People started living for a community. And because of their obsession to see one another grow up in Jesus, a community life formed in order to serve that purpose. Mere community living makes us merely hippies, guys. People long for community living. They can come and have community living here with us. The kingdom has not come. The kingdom has not come. Community living in itself, people being vulnerable, crying because they could tell their stories, the kingdom has not come. Unless it is found on the foundation of Jesus. Now, one of my favorite verses in Matthew 16, where the question when Jesus asked them, who do the people say I am? And, you know, the answer, some say John the Baptist risen from the dead, Elijah, a prophet. Who do you say I am? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God, Peter answered. And Jesus said to Peter, "Peter, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father that is in heaven. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah. Blessed are you, Peter. And on this rock, on this revelation that you have, on me as the revelation, I will build my church." Jesus is saying, no inch of the true church has been built unless it is founded on the revelation of Jesus. Meaning, we would look at a day like today and we would credit, this is the church. How was worship today? How was the preach today? How was the expression today? Jesus asked one thing. We ask, how does it look? Jesus asks, where does that expression come from? Does it come from a revelation of Jesus? Or is it merely a culture that we're adopting? We are very concerned that people give the right answer. Jesus asked one question. Where did you get your answer? Is it a revelation? Or did you merely learn it from flesh and blood? We are so concerned on the outward appearance. Jesus asks, where does that outward appearance come from? Is it from the right foundation? Or is it simply a culture that we're adopting? A couple of years, many years ago now actually, I was with Naoko in Japan. Her father-in-law is a pastor there. And in the south of Japan, in that one island, Kyushu, is a couple of believers that her dad has kept contact with through the years. There's no church there, as we would know, an organized church, you know. There's just a couple of believers there in the south and so on. And he would go every year, once or twice, go there, gather some of those believers and just teach them some stuff, you know. And in that time, I was there and we would go down there and I was so excited. I'm thinking like, I want to start a church here, right? And there's certain ingredients that needs to be there to have it a church. And so this is what I decided. I was very into the home church type of idea. And by the way, just for that situation, that's the only thing that it would have worked. So I was thinking, I'm going to get the group believers together. They were there. They were about 10. And I said to them, okay, guys, can we commit to gather in this house once a week? They said, Yes. All right. Can we commit that when we come together, that we will at least have one meal together? Yes. Can we commit that in these meetings, we will be vulnerable and honest with one another? Yes. Now, in sometime in Japan, like many other places, but especially in Japan, their homestyle meetings is many times known by a lot of negative talk and a lot of gossip. So I said, all right, can we determine not to gossip in these meetings? Yes. Okay, can we determine whenever we share our issues and whenever we share what is wrong in our lives, that it won't end there, that we will be somehow be able to also encourage people? We can't leave it that everybody just tell how horrible their lives is. Can we just have something where we can... Yes. All right. So then I'm trying to encourage, invoke conversation. You won't believe it. After a while, I'm stepping back. I don't understand what's going on. I mean, they speak in Japanese. I'm stepping back and I see people are starting to share. This church life is being displayed right in front of my eyes. One woman starts crying as she's sharing her difficulty with her husband that doesn't serve the Lord or and treats her in a certain way. Other ladies come, encourage her and say, it's okay, I went through the same thing. And this whole thing, you know, it's just playing down out over me. I was just playing in front of me and I'm thinking, this is so awesome. Then someone notified me, I realized later, but there was one or two unbelievers also in the meeting. And they were participating just as much as everybody else in this meeting. It was... And I walked away from that meeting, you know, the next day, and I couldn't get it out. It for me, it felt like it had all the ingredients that church life should have had. There was vulnerability, there was openness, there was sharing, there was community. It had everything that it should have. Yet something was wrong, and I felt the Lord spoke to me, and He said to me, your foundation was wrong. The foundation was not built on Christ. Because our community life should have one purpose. Not to have community as an end, but as a community in order to bring people to have more of Jesus. I believe there is no expression that bold people are better in Jesus than true community life. But if we lose the aim, that is to raise people up in Jesus and to encourage people from the life of Jesus, we're missing the point. We're just really a bunch of hippies. All right? And we must be careful. And as a pastor, you sometimes, this is one of my battles, you know, people attending our meetings. It's one of these things, you know. But I fight this thing that I'm not going to pastor to attendance. I'm not going to pastor attendance of meetings. I'm not going to pastor attendance of church programs. Because merely running through the church program is not achieving anything. If people are not at meetings, the root is not attend meetings. The root is, where's your heart? Where's Jesus? Where's the life? My attention is to always bring people back. Now, sometimes for some people it will just click it in if there's just a nudge to attend a meeting and that type of things. But the goal, we can't lose sight of the goal. We can't lose sight of the aim. It should remain, the foundation should remain Jesus. Right. Thirdly. You guys are with me here, right? Okay. Thirdly, the church, Christianity is not a moral code. Right? So, the foundation of people's Christian walk becomes not sinning or morality. Now, you guys won't know it, or you guys might be very aware of it, but much of what we come from, if I would have used what's a Christian, you would think of the goody two-shoe guy. Or the guy that don't get drunk. That's when we think about Christian. I see that foundation when I speak to people and these are the type of questions that come out of them. As bloody a flipboard. How far can I go with a girl? All right. How much can I drink? Can I drink? What places can I go to? What places can I not go to? These type of obsessions, now again, I'm not saying that this is not questions that should be asked and should come out of our relationship with God, but these are the type of foundations that people set in place not to sin. That's not the foundation on what we build. God is not trying to set in place a moral code. And what happens is so many people actually have been tricked by this. And the Pharisees would be the cream of the crop in this. And here are some of the things, some of the attributes of people that build that type of foundation. Matthew 23, verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. What is it saying? What is Jesus saying? What is the characteristics of these type of foundation laying people? Many times how I would see or recognize that wrong foundation is people emphasize the little things and neglect the great things. One of the good understanding of Christian maturity is that people understand what is weighty matters and what is less weighty matters. Not that we neglect the less weighty matters, but we know what to emphasize as important. And not neglect, but less emphasize the things that is not important. And we start, working to the T whether a guy is tithing or not. We start beating that thing more than, and not regarding whether a person can love, whether a person can show faithfulness, whether a person have faith, and that type of thing. All right. Fourth thing. It's not on the board. I was kind of, all right, so what was the I must just remember now. First one was foundation is not discipline. Second one, foundation is not the church. Third thing, the foundation is not a moral code. Christianity is not a moral code, even though we have morality. We're the most moral people in the world. Our morality surpasses the Pharisees. Yet, we will only do that when Christ is the foundation. The fourth thing is, a wrong foundation, boom, 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 boom. A wrong foundation is right doctrine. As soon as right doctrine become our foundation and not Jesus, there's a problem. Now, please, doctrine is so important. We need to have doctrine in place. We need to have right doctrine in place. But watch out for doctrine to substitute the foundation, which is Christ. The doctrine guys that make them foundation, you know where you find them? You find them on Facebook. You find them on Facebook calling out everybody a false prophet, a wolf, and the Antichrist. They get hung up on all kinds of views, which might even be important. But the way that they fight, the way that they go around it, clearly shows that they start missing what it's really all about, and that is about Christ, about Jesus. Some of them will make Christianity a subject like science, geography, or maths. And the better you study it and the more knowledge you have about it, the more you're advancing and increasing in this discipline or in this field. But Christianity is not a subject. It's not a book of doctrines and rules that we study to get to know. One of the sad things in the history of the church is through the, let's call it what they are, it's not a secret, the Roman Catholic Church. The church really fell away from proper doctrine, proper life, really. Jesus was not the foundation. And that one verse, Matthew 16, that I earlier quote, they completely got it wrong and didn't make Jesus the stone, but said Peter was the rock and Peter was the foundation. And that means Peter was the bishop of Rome, which he was never, which became the Pope. And from there on, the Pope became the foundation on which they built, which, needless to say, is completely off. But the church was off for 1,000 years. And then what happened? God raised some teachers up. that started putting in right doctrine. There was a lot of life. People were turning to Jesus. But with that, there was a great move to restore right doctrine. And with right doctrine, all kind of things were put in place, like the right creeds. What do we believe? And so people would still say, what do we believe? Ek glo in God die Vader, die Almagtige, die Skepper van hemel en aarde. That is perfect theology, and that's true. And those creeds are so valuable. There is nothing wrong with those creeds. But soon, the obsession became more to study and learn and be able to recite the creed than ever get to the person. And again, right doctrine was the obsession instead of Jesus. And the life of Jesus fell away again. Jesus said to the Pharisees, one of my favorite verses again. You get a lot of my favorite verses today. John 5, verse 39, 40 says to the Pharisees, you search the scriptures, and in them you think there's eternal life. You think in merely studying this book that is life. But this very book is testifying of me, the person, Jesus. And you're not willing to come to me as the true life and as the true answer of things. All right. The last one. All my charismatic friends here. Spirituality and mysticism is not our foundation. Colossians 2. It's just on all four of my points. You guys do understand. I'm not trying to say that's wrong. I'm just saying they can't be the foundation. So I think you get it. Okay. So, let no one disqualifying you, insisting on asceticism and worship of angels, going in detail about visions, puffed up without reason by a sensuous mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom the whole body, nourished and knit together through its joints and ligaments, grows with the growth that is from God. Now, let me first say to you, the worshiping of angels is not merely an issue that was found in some pagan religion, right? In the book of Hebrews, the first two chapters, Hebrews 1, Hebrews 2, the writer tries to establish a doctrine that Jesus is more important than the angels. Why did he have to do that? Because there was quite a bit of angel activity in those days. People would encounter angels. You see it in the book of Acts. It was not that angels wasn't around. The problem was, at some stage, these guys get so caught up in the angelic and the fact that there's angels that their hearts started drifting away, where the angels, as the scriptures, as the prophetic, as community life, was simply there to point us to Christ. People started holding onto these experiences. And the experience became the thing that people chase after, except other than Christ. It's interesting, people that study and make Christianity a mere subject and a study field, it's interestingly, as their knowledge increase, how their pride increase, knowledge puffs up. But I'm telling you, in the same sense, people that are always boasting about visions and spiritual experiences start finding worth in their spiritual experiences, and pretty soon it also puffs them up and prides them. Now, a thing that is interesting for me was, I don't know, there's a movie. It was first the book, Heaven is So Real, all right? It's a little boy. I think that's the book's name, all right? It's a little boy, near-death experience, went to heaven, came later back, got healed, and then his parents realized that this guy have knowledge that's impossible for him to know, and it later kind of then turned out that he had heavenly experiences. He was with God, and God showed him all kinds of things. There's a lot of people that's very skeptic about it. I believe it. I actually believe it. I believe it was God, and so on. But the problem is, I've read the book, so I was very excited about the movie. And then the movie came out. Now, you guys go watch that movie. They have able to take that same story, kept it exactly same. They just took Jesus out. And they started giving people hope by there is life after death. There is heaven. There is a God that loves you. And he knows this type of information about you. The life after death type of thing became the message instead of the thing that it was all about, which was Christ. It's interesting, you know, as charismatics. Well, let me first say, the church seems to sway in imbalances. Some people make Christianity really a study field in a book, and the more knowledge they have, the greater they feel about themselves. But then there's this other side of people that are very experience orientated. And so Christianity is really revolving more and more about visions and experiences. And what gives them a sense of spirituality or advanced things is, and I struggle to get a different word for it, how weird they can be, right? So, it's what he says then, it's so true about that verse. It's people have a craving for visions and spiritual experiences, but with that goes almost a John the Baptist type of lifestyle. So people try to be odd. People will do extreme fasts, or not fasting again is not wrong, but there's an extreme fast or extreme having this life of a spiritual guru. That's the type of thing that they found themselves in, where they put their body for some kind of extremities. They want to have all kinds of experiences, but all of that type of monk nunness become the thing that they seek after, other than a foundation of Jesus. Do I believe in visions? Yes. Do I want it? Yes. So that I can see Jesus more. I want to tell you, Paul, listen to this. Paul had an experience. He went to the third heaven. He says, I had experiences there. To be honest, I don't have the words. I can't explain to you. In fact, it was so great and so awesome that I saw. In order to keep me humble, God had to send a messenger from Satan. Oh, that's loving God right there. I would have at least sent like an angel or a messenger of Satan just to keep. But I want to say, you know, Paul says 14 years ago, if a guy of a third heaven experience as extreme as Paul, and he could keep his mouth shut about it for 14 years, God can trust you with a vision. He was not showing off in any way how spiritual he was. In fact, he was a great steward of the experiences that God had for him. And for 14 years, he didn't say a thing about it. At least that's how it comes across and how it looks about it. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't share our visions and so on. But I hope something could impart about Paul's heart, that it wasn't to display or show off spirituality at all. He understood the essence. He understood what it was all about. And understand that even visions and spiritual experiences, which we crave, it can't be an end. It's simply a means to bring us to the person. In Revelation 19, John, I mean, Revelation, imagine you're the receiver of the book of Revelation. Imagine you see that type of stuff. I don't know. We'll probably explode. I don't know. It will be just too much, you know. And John, in this situation, had this. This is the problem. Again, we can get hung up on the vision. We can hung up on the experience. And an angel needs to tell John this. Then I fell down at his feet to worship him. This being, this thing. But he said to me, you must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers who hold the testimony of Jesus. Worship God. For the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. I want you to, whenever you go on YouTube, whenever you read about guys that have again just you know, for lunch go and sit with Apostle Paul in heaven and speak to him and that type of experiences. Look, I am drawn to it, and some of it I really think is God, but I want you to listen to the message there. Does that spirit of prophecy testify of Jesus? Does that thing point to Jesus? Is that the essence or is that the means? Or does the experience become the end? Does that become the thing in what we build around? All right. Amen. I'm going to read one verse in Colossians, just for fun, and then we'll pray. Colossians 1, verse 15, that's it? Hey? Colossians 1, it's right in the beginning. Okay. So here's what Paul is saying about Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by Him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions, rulers or authorities, all things were created through Him and for Him. And He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. And He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything He might be preeminent. For in Him all the fullness of God was well pleased to dwell, and through Him to reconcile to Himself all things, whether on earth, in heaven, making peace by the blood of His cross. Let's quickly pray. Father, I pray that we will firstly be known as a Christ people. We will firstly not be known as merely a disciplined people. We'll not be known as merely a community-filled people. We will not be merely known as a good doctrine people. We will not be merely known as a purity people or a moral people. We won't be first known as a spiritual, mystical type of people, Father. But I pray that we'll be firstly known as a Christ people. Father, I pray that again our assurance, our confidence more than ever is that the answer that You have for all mankind, the answer to the church, the answer to the world, the answer in every situation is Christ. Father, I pray that every subtle deception that want to replace even the good that is in Your Word with Him, Father, that we will distance ourselves for it and recognize for what it is. Father, for those that had a Christian experience that is really so far separated from the real Jesus. It's been religion and even churchianity, everything has confused them so much of who You are. I pray by Your Spirit, God, that You would turn us and that You will open up our eyes, open the eyes of our hearts to the true person, Jesus. That we will be lovers of Him, and that we, even as Paul, that have seen so much, accomplished so much, done so much, at the end of his life can say, I consider all things a loss for the excellence of knowing the person, Jesus. Take Your rightful place, Jesus. Take Your rightful place as the chief cornerstone. Take Your rightful place as the foundation and from which we have church life, from which we have everything else in our lives. Father, may we have lives that when Your fire would come and test, the work will stand because it was built on the person of Jesus. We praise You and we honor You. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. All right, guys, so that's a wrap. Have a great day. Just quickly, I know for some of you that's on the adults group would have seen and you might have heard that we've been really contending for Becca Hamilton's daughter. Some of you guys might not be on the group or no. I just want to quickly say that so she's going through the last round of chemo. She just went through it, and the chemo was just striking really, really bad yesterday and the day before, and there was times that they were really fighting for her life, and just happy to say that right now she is quite stable. Today still will be, according to how the chemo works itself out, today would still be quite a tough day, where she needs some assistance, medical assistance, and then blood plates and blood transfusions. I don't even need to get Doreen to explain this stuff, but all these type of things are still needing to happen today. And then by Monday it should be according to schedule, if everything works according to how it should work. Her body should start turning around and start producing own white blood cells, own blood plates, and should start building up a resistance from herself. So it's one more day that she needs to press through, and then the chemo and everything is finished. And then I think in a week or 2 weeks' time, the scans will be done, and we'll see what the results is. All right. Then just one more thing. We prayed a couple of weeks ago. We prayed some of the outreaches out. The person that we didn't pray for, so that you guys can keep in prayer, is Gerda. Gerda's joining us in the Namibian outreach. Very excited for that. We will be going this Friday. And then most of the Brazilian guys, all right? You guys are flying tomorrow. Okay. And then all the other guys, I think, also starting to go from this weekend and so on. So we will have, by next weekend, by next Sunday, we will have over 50, 55 people from this congregation, different places in the world. Ooh, that is spreading, hopefully, the fragrance of Jesus. All right. Yeah. Ink feels left behind, you know. I want to make some end-time jokes on that, but I won't. All right. Bless you guys. Have an awesome week, the rest of the Sunday and week.